Welcome to 51 First Dates.
I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy.
And we are doing an experiment.
And talking about dating.
And love. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Hi, everybody. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy.
And this is 51 First Dates.
And we're joined today by a very special guest. Today we have Dr. Darcy Sterling here. She's Tinder's dating and relationships trend expert. So we are very, very lucky and so excited for this episode. Hi, Darcy.
Hi. Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And yeah, I'm also really, really just excited because Darcy's a therapist and I'm just always very happy be in the presence of a therapist.
Always happy to get a little free advice.
Yes. And also just like have someone where I'm like, somebody knows something.
I mean, you know, we're all on our path, but ideally I'm a few steps ahead of my clients. That would be the appropriate order.
Actually, so this is a fun tidbit. Liza and I at one point actually saw the same therapist when we were friends way back in the day.
How'd that work out for you guys?
It kind of was before we were close friends.
Yeah.
So it was like a very bizarre thing. That's like, I think why we're like very excited to have a therapist on, because like we're always like, this podcast, or our whole business was brought to you by therapy. That's how we met, through our therapist. Yeah.
But like, you met through the therapist?
Sort of.
It was, okay, so it's the, whatever. I'm going to tell the shortest story, version story I can. We were in an acting class. Our acting teacher referred us both. We both were talking to him in one-on-ones, whatever, and he was like, oh, you should think about going to therapy. And he referred us to the same therapist without us knowing. We weren't friends at this point. We were just in the same class. We were acquaintances. We got close through the course of the class. And then as we had become close friends, like, at some point realized we had the same therapist. And we were like, oh, my God, this is just a bizarre mind fuck.
That moment when you realized, now, how did you realize that you had the same therapist?
So there's
it's such actor, like, this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay? It was such actor class BS, I feel like, because I think I was literally had just done my scene for the day and my teacher was talking to me like, all right, Kimmy, like digging in. And I was like, well, I haven't been going to therapy. I think I mentioned she for my therapist. And you came up to me after.
You said something specifically that was a phrase or something my therapist said, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, she sees the therapist.
Oh,
I just like knew in a blaze of glory. I was like, it's the same. I know it is. Like, I just had this, it was something very generic, but I just had this intuition and I was like, do you see this woman? And you're like, it was very like,
yeah,
I just made a face. I always forget that listeners cannot see my face.
It was kind of wild. And then not sparked our friendship, but was at the same time as we were becoming friends. And the first project we ever did was about seeing the same therapist. And then just like, so it goes. But we always encourage our listeners to go. So I'm
absolutely
just like,
no. And I love that you guys met through the therapist. That's a great story. No, that's amazing.
Yeah. My favorite thing about doing this podcast is getting listener mail that says I'm going to therapy because of you guys talking about it. We talk about therapy all the time and how important it is.
And the irony is that the people that are in therapy are the least that I worry about. It's the masses who aren't in therapy. I don't understand people who can walk and talk without having done their own work. I would literally need to be connected to a Prozac drip, frankly.
Yeah.
If I hadn't been in decades of my own work, I would not be a functional human being. And am continuing to do my own work. Like, I don't think we're ever done. People in my personal life always ask, oh my God, how do you deal with hearing people's problems all day long? I don't listen to people's problems all day long. My clients come in, they're the hardest working humans I know. They come in, they've done their homework, we review their homework, we measure how far they are from accomplishing their therapy goal, we talk about things that they want in life. The majority of my clients that I attract aren't people who are necessarily unhappy in their lives, or they're not necessarily, they don't always walk in limping. They walk in having this vague sense that there's something more that they want out of life. I call it like a vague existential crisis where they just want. And so if you think about mental health as being like on a spectrum, remember that timeline that they taught us how to like add and subtract and multiply with kindergarten? And zero is in the middle of that. That's no symptoms. Most therapists work with clients when they're from zero into the negative numbers. I work with clients generally from zero into the positive numbers. Mm. I do what, you know, is dream work, but not in the psychoanalytic sense of the term, in the what do you want to be when you grow up? Because as New Yorkers, we know that you blink and a decade has passed. And if you're not strategic with where you want to go and what you want to accomplish, you're going to find yourself living someone else's life on someone else's terms. And that's just really sad.
Mm. Yeah.
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 Oh my God. This is totally resonating with me right now.
No,
zero percent. Buzzkill. I just was like, oh my God.
Well, I think we both had that moment within the past like year. And now like I'm getting my MBA and you're working in full-time jobs that are really fancy. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about them, but anyway, right?
No.
It's like MBA.
I am.
But you're working in cool jobs.
But I'm also just constantly like, I want to make my movie. I want to do this. It's hard, whatever. When you're an artistic person, you're always wanting to do the next thing. So it's hard. And but also living in New York, you got to make money. You got to work.
You got to pay the bills. And it's hard juggling those things. Like, how do you not abandon your dreams while paying the bills?
Totally.
While maintaining your day job so you can live in whatever place you live in.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And I think that most entrepreneurs are built, most businesses are built in my ideal world, because I'm not a huge risk taker, although my wife thinks I am. I prefer that businesses be built in the context of paying one's bills through the day job. And then when you're making almost enough money to live on, that's when you let it go and you can just, you know, that then ignites the motivation to actually bring your business to the next level. Mm-hmm. Because if you have another job or another income source that is paying those bills, which, by the way, has nothing to do with the topic we're talking about today, right?
Yeah, that's true. Thank you for bringing it back.
No. I am so sorry, but no. Feed me a tidbit and I'll just go off on a tangent and take you down a black hole.
No, apologies. No, no. I feel like that will, what you were just mentioning will resonate with so many listeners. Just, it's because it also has to do, it feels very similar to what I think a lot of people experience with dating too. And again, it kind of goes back to norms and like, money and which brings us to our beautiful segue is what we're talking about today.
Our theme is like I continue to air quote
the theme is Dr. Darcy plus
so we're gonna talk about just, you know, fucking hashtag new year, new you, whatever, not really, but dating rules to abandon, notions to shrug off, and a little bit of like the notion that there's a certain like order in which you have to do things.
Particularly if you're a high functioning person of privilege, or even not person of privilege, but you're upwardly mobile, or you aspire to be, you are expected to hit some milestones in a very particular order. And the young adult to-do list, the bane of every one of my clients' existence, pretty much.
Before we get too far into that, only because I just think it's interesting, will you just tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got where you are? Like, you know, the highlights of your life story.
Sure.
However you want to do it.
I also have a memoir, but I'm kidding. No, I was going to say, but I'll condense it all into a soundbite. So I got my master's degree from Columbia University a million years ago, and then started my own private practice because I wanted to bring really good counseling services to, I was raised middle class. Mm-hmm. And when I was growing up as a teenager, there were services for the underprivileged and disenfranchised and services for the super rich, and there was nothing for people in between. And had there been somebody for me, I would have spent probably a couple hundred thousand less on therapy than what I wound up having to spend as an adult going into therapy if I had been able to connect with a decent therapist as a younger person. So I specialized in working with adolescents for the first 15 years of my career, bringing services to the middle class. And so my practice was called Alternatives Adolescent Counseling Center. And we were all things to adolescents. Like, there, we had full-time therapists, learning consultants, dietitians, psychiatrists, trainers, just intending to come from a very holistic approach and mobilizing families to get their kids out of therapy as quickly as possible. But you have to help them build support outside of therapy in order to do that. Then I went to NYU, I got my PhD, and I moved to New York. And I guess as I grew and aged, so that was like my very early 30s. By the time I was in my early 30s, I was almost grown up enough to let go of the teenagers and to begin working with young adults. And young adulthood, believe it or not, is 18 to 32. And that's my sweet spot, you know, 22 to 35-ish. Mm-hmm. So I began specializing in young adults and helping neurotic New Yorkers, which, like, if you're going to be successful in New York, you have to have a modicum of neuroses. Mm-hmm. You need a little OCD to make it in this town. It's not an easy town to make it in. Not that any town is right now. But so I began attracting just really high-achieving, successful young people who were killing it at their jobs and just felt like something in their lives was missing. And over the years, I began to untangle the common denominators of what brought people to me. And what I learned is, regardless of what they're talking about in my office, it is always relationship oriented, whether it's about getting along better at work, getting along at all at work, getting along with their families of origin, especially around the holidays, or intimate relationships, or needing a tribe, because, you know, we have all these institutional situations growing up through school and through extracurricular activities where we're in an environment where there are so many people our own age that we're exposed to that our tribe happens so organically. And then we become young adults. And if you wind up in a city, whether it's LA, New York, Chicago, or anywhere else, you have to actually mindfully build your tribe out or it doesn't happen. And the irony of New York is that you can be surrounded by people and so incredibly lonely. Mm. And so what I found was, I really only teach people relationship skills, because the same skills that I use with my wife, Steph, I use with every person in my life. My clients, you guys, my friends, you know, professionals, everybody. And then I got famously single, which I'm the host of on E! Network, which was Talk About Lucky. I got very lucky with that. That was an amazing ride. I got to build a whole tribe out in LA when I have like this whole family of people, because I would go there to film every season and I would leave there. I would live there. I would leave my wife. I would live there and, you know, put my clients on hold. Thank God they're like, they had it together and I could just, you know, say goodbye for a month. And then, you know, so I have this whole other tribe in LA. And that ride has been amazing. And more recently, I became Tinder's dating and relationships trend expert, which, talk about lucky twice, struck by lightning two times, which is amazing for me, because what I've come to believe about my mission in life is that I'm put on this planet to teach everybody relationship skills and dating skills, because they're teachable and nobody teaches them to us, which is infuriating when you think about it. Like, what do they teach us in high school? How many of those? I mean, okay, geometry now kind of makes sense now that I have my eyebrows to keep in mind. And like, I understand that there are dimensions that I have to, that I have to calculate if I want the arch just where it should be. Mm-hmm. But truthfully, all kidding aside, how much of what we learn in high school do we apply in everyday life? And how useful would relationship skills be if we were all taught them at a young age?
Yeah.
At the age when we begin to, we're basically having a dress rehearsal with every relationship that we have for how we're going to handle and manage our long-term relationships in life. Mm-hmm. We're building those muscles in our younger years, when we're teenagers and in our early 20s. And if you start out with great habits, it's so much easier to keep those consistent. But because we don't teach them to anybody, everyone comes to me limping, and it's like, okay, so everything you learned about relationships, forget it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those girls who wrote that book, The Rules, that your parents grew up reading and then you were indoctrinated in, they actually had no qualifications to be writing that book. And by the way, they're all divorced. So, I mean, not that being in a marriage is the, you know, is a necessary qualifier of a relationship expert, but you should go to school. I mean, as somebody who has six figures in student loan debt, I just think that everyone should have to go to school to call themselves something. So the beauty of working with Tinder is now I get to teach people who I would never have reached otherwise. I get to teach all these swipers, you know, dating and relationship rules. And even if I don't get to go super deep, I whet their appetite for more. And that's all I want to do. I just want, if I do nothing else for people, I want people to contemplate the fact that they've never been taught relationship skills. They've all learned them, as I did, from our parents, mm-hmm. better or worse. Divorce rate is north of 50% when we were growing up. It's better now because people your age are waiting to get married until you're actually fully formed adults and you're enjoying being single. So you're not picking partners at 21, 22, who you're going to have nothing in common with at 32 and no ability to predict the fact that you're going to have nothing to talk about at that age.
Yeah.
Because at 22, you know, the whole world is this moment right now. It's impossible to imagine that you're going to be potentially incompatible with your partner in a decade.
Totally. And I mean, I feel like it's funny because you were mentioning that we learned these skills from our parents. I feel like I also learned so many ideas and notions of what a relationship should be from like shitty 90s movies and TV shows.
Oh, hell yes.
And now I'm like, and it took me a long time to realize that actually like what I wanted was something really different from that. Like that's not any relationship that I saw in any rom-com. Like I hate, like, you know, it's and even totally. Whatever, some of the better ones that aren't shitty. I'm just like, I don't want that. It's so unequal and whatever. It's just not my thing.
And speaking of not so shitty rom-coms that started in the 90s, Sex and the City started out as if you look at season one, they were women who didn't want a relationship. They were actually foreshadowing this amazing trend that Tinder has uncovered in its recent research, that millennials are choosing to be single much longer now and choosing it because they're looking to learn about themselves and they're looking to explore the world and have adventures and they're dating, but that doesn't mean that they're in a relationship. You can both be dating and single. They're not mutually exclusive. But I don't know what happened with Sex and the City because if you watch the trajectory of the seasons, that all turned around and suddenly they were all chasing relationships, except, 50% of them were chasing a relationship. The other 50% were like, you know, Miranda and Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. I just started rewatching from the beginning. I just had this like post-finals was like, I want to get into this. Like, I just need something that's like easy, more lighthearted. It's really interesting to look back and see how much was obviously groundbreaking at the time, but how much like, yes, they passed the Bechdel test, but how many conversations are still about men?
Totally.
Like, how much it still is about men?
But isn't it great that, like, Miranda was remarking about it? She was saying, guys, can we have a conversation that doesn't focus on men? And I don't know that women know how to, like, we had never heard dialogue. Like, you guys can't see this. I have chills because I'm such a dork. Like, we had never heard dialogue like that back then.
Yes,
we had never heard anything like that. So that was groundbreaking. That was paradigm shifting. We had never even contemplated that a conversation shouldn't revolve around who we were dating and who we weren't dating.
Somebody it might have been... I suck because I'm going to reference something that I don't remember where I read it, but someone just wrote like a great blog post / article. It might have been one of our friends at Man Repeller. Hey, Man Repeller, we love them. but basically it was like, in 2018, Miranda would be the star of Sex and the City.
Yes,
like show were remade in 2018, Miranda's the protagonist. Like, easy. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how the world has changed. The Mirandas are front and center now of like our TV watching, our consciousness, which is so fucking cool. That's the people we're putting front and center now.
And Charlotte would look archaic, right?
Yep. Yes.
And she just looked, she was a rules follower, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she grew up, she was your mother's generation, yep. And mm-hmm. she grew up indoctrinated by this fabrication. Like I just can't. I can't. I have no words. There's an eye roll that's happening that you can't see. Yeah. It's unbelievable to me that that a whole generation of women were raised. And what it did, the harm is so, like, deep-rooted. What it also did was it reinforced this fucked-up notion. Can I curse?
Oh, my God. Okay. We curse all the time. Yeah.
Awesome, because I would be mute otherwise. Very shortly, I'll run out of words, and I will have nothing but F-bombs left to share. What it reinforced was this notion that as women, our success is predicated on our relationship status being married. Not even just in a relationship, because that only buys you so much time, right? You're young adults.
Yep.
You tell me.
Yeah. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And you've been in a serious relationship. My relationship is because of this podcast, because I did my therapist work of going on the dates. But I'm thinking, like, I admired the Mirandas. All of our listeners admired the Mirandas. But there was still something weird in me. We did not do this podcast because we wanted, like, me to find a boyfriend. It was more about changing up my attitude on dating.
And truly. So did you truly go on?
I went on 32 of the 51. I met my now boyfriend, who is truly, like, the best person I've ever met, on date 13. So I really pushed myself to keep going on
good
dates.
Good for you. No, that is.
It changed my entire perspective on dating.
Okay, clients that are listening to this is why I tell you. You know, not to be that I told you so asshole, but, like, honestly, this is why I tell you to keep dating, even when you meet that person.
Yep.
Keep dating, because if nothing else, it creates a comparison where your certainty is that much greater that you found the right person.
Yeah. And I knew I was moving to get to LA. Like, there was just so much. I truly was, like, loving this project. I wasn't being mean by going on these dates. It wasn't like I definitely am not open to it. I was just more, it was like a little bit self-involved in that I wanted to change my perspective. Liza was like a great support system. She was putting me on setups. It was just like, truly, it's so cheesy, but like so many women I still know who are just feel stuck, especially I'm in this business school bubble right now and like people are starting to pair off. It's like our first year and they get really insecure. And I'm like, don't, like when it becomes all about one guy, like I feel like, women to women, it doesn't matter, but I'm thinking specifically this tends to be like kind of heteronormative. It happens a lot. Like putting all of your worth in that person you start liking.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't know, there's something about doing more dating or just like now being in a relationship, because I was single for almost all of my 20s. Like prior, I'm like, my worth isn't different. Nothing is like, I didn't even have huge pressure from my family. I feel lucky. Like, what's wrong with you? It's just like, but there was still something in me, and it kind of goes back to the young adult timeline that you're supposed to be on. I was, though, like Miranda's who I would root for, I was still, I felt like something was missing.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
totally.
Yeah.
And so it's so much bigger than our families. And I, when I was working with teenagers and their parents and a parent coach, which I say in air quotes, only to connote that we called ourselves that so the parents would actually come to us without thinking they were in therapy. But that's what it was. We were helping them to build parenting skills, another skill that society doesn't teach anyone, but I digress. So even when you're lucky enough and fortunate enough to grow up in a family unit where that young adult to-do list, that pressure to get marriage is not drilled into your head, because our development is so much more impacted by there, it's so complicated what creates a human being. And what is nature versus nurture? We're not born. Well, and so here I'm going to contradict myself a little bit. We, to a certain extent, we are hardwired, especially as women, to seek out a partner, because through evolution, our survival was predicated on not being single. Whereas men, they could make it on their own. I mean, they needed a tribe, but they didn't need a partner. They just needed to procreate. And so, and I'm speaking in a heteronormative perspective, but the point of the matter is that you still felt all that pressure, and it wasn't coming from your family of origin. It was coming from society at large, because you were raised in an era, which we still live in, but I am so grateful to hear that it's changing. A young woman's self-worth is tied and tethered to her being you know, successfully in a committed relationship and then into marriage.
Yeah. And it's funny because I feel like the focus is so, the pressure to be in a relationship is so strong that I don't actually think I focused on like the being in love part of it until like someone taught me how to. Cause like, look, being in love is fucking awesome. Like, I think it's like the only thing that redeems being a human, which is very hard. You know, I mean, not really. There's lots of things that
no,
do.
No, I hear you.
But like, it's an incredible feeling and I understand why people chase it. But I just realized, I think, after actually like really falling in love with someone for the first time, that I had been chasing anything that had nothing to do with love, you know, that just had to do with like what I thought I needed, what I thought I wanted. Mm-hmm. Like, what was he like? What did he look like? Was it someone like I could bring around my family? Was it someone I could bring around my friends? Like all of these things. Like, I feel like we always kind of call them like checklisty things. Like, does he fit the checklist?
Yeah.
And it wasn't really about my own experience of it at all. Like it had nothing to do with my experience of it. It was everything about what I felt I should have and where I felt I should be at what age.
So what was your scary age? Every woman has a scary age. Yeah. I want to know. What was your scary age?
I think, well, I was really, I mean, this sounds dramatic. I am very dramatic. I'm a Gemini. But every age brought its own really distinct fear. For me, I always thought 27 was the year that I should become an adult because I have a much older brother. He's 16 years older than me and he got married when he was 27. And my whole life I was like, well, 27 is when you become an adult because of that. Like I was, you know, very young then, but it just really implanted in my mind. Like he was older and had it together and he had a great job and he was, you know, he's very, I think, like traditionally successful. Mm-hmm. And he's happy. He's, you know, he's got like Kimmy knows my brother well.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's great. Yeah. Like he's, you know, got a great family. He's a great person. But I think that I always was kind of like 27 is when you're an adult. And then when I was 27 and I didn't have health insurance or like a real job or like all of these things, mm-hmm. I was like, well, cool, I failed. But, you know, I think that wrapping my head around the idea of like, I'm happy, I have like a great partner who I love, like the things that I really did have that mm-hmm. were really solid helped me to get past the idea that any age is scary.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense.
I just turned 30 in November, so I always thought that was my scary age, but, like, weirdly, mine has to do – like, I think 28 was, like, harder for me. Like, it snuck up on me as being the scary age. 30 was my scary age. Like, back in the day when we were still acting at, like, 22, I was like, that'll be when I quit at 30. Stopped acting way before that. But still, like, that – like, I mean, I'm getting my MBA now. I'm going down a more traditional route. So that 30 was a scary age. However, my mom had me when she was 28. I'm the oldest. I have a younger brother. And I think, like, actually coming up on 28 gave me lots of scaries. Like, where am I reevaluating it? Something about, like, later 20s. Mm-hmm. And being like, I am deeply single. We were doing better. We had, like, our company then. But it was still – there was just a lot of scary in the air in terms of, like
– there was uncertainty.
Yeah. And I was never – I have certain friends where it's like, I thought I'd have a – be married by 30, baby by 33, latest. And I didn't have that so specifically. But still, I just thought I'd be somewhere else. I think it was more like career goals. Like, I thought I'd be, like, fully rolling in it by 30. But, mm-hmm. like, 28 became that really scary year.
Yeah.
And in the moment, yeah.
Yeah, I hear that.
Did you have a scary year?
I did. I had two. So, oddly enough, I found 25 to be a rough birthday. I don't know why. It was the weirdest thing. Keep in mind, I'm, like, significantly older than you guys. And then I got past 25... clearly. And I had it in my mind, I cannot be married later than, like, I can't be a 30-year-old who's not married. Mm. And I literally remember telling my then boyfriend, now ex-husband, yo, we just bought a house together, which is to say that I put down the down payment and you're paying half the mortgage, which is sweet. But my family thinks I'm crazy. And you know, I need a timeline. And I, and he was a good guy. And he, like, the pressure was real. Like, I pressured him, and he was like, inside of a year, we'll be engaged. And we were, and I was a 29-year-old bride, mm-hmm. and I was a 36-year-old divorcee. And, you know, then married again at 39. So I got married at 29, and then finally for the last time at 39. And I'm now married to a woman, which is a much better fit for me.
Yeah.
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 I walk the planet much easier today than I did. But I will say, and no regrets, had I had relationship skills then that I have now, I could have made any relationship work.
Mm.
Now, listeners may wonder, well, would it have been the right relationship? There is no right relationship. I'm sorry. There, that's such a sad thing to say. I feel like I'm telling people that Santa isn't real.
No.
But really, there is no right relationship. Any relationship is right if you're growing and you're learning how to love better and how better, and you're being more deeply loved by your partner. Any relationship is fine. You yeah. know? I hate to say it, but relationship success is less about compatibility and more about relationship skills and being a whole individual. And I tell that to my single clients, you know, and friends, that, you know, focus on you, grow your own strengths, nurture yourself, become a better individual. You'll attract by, you know, the law of attraction. You're simply going to attract a better version of a partner, mm-hmm. because we're always going to attract a version of ourselves wherever we are on the developmental path that we're on for ourselves. We're going to attract somebody on a similarly plotted. Now their fractures are going to look different from ours, but they're going to be by and large about as evolved as we are. Mm-hmm. So grow yourself and get a lot of that muscle built early on, and then you're going to attract somebody who you're more likely to be able to grow with, which in and of itself is kind of crazy, that we're supposed to pick a partner and without a crystal ball who we can imagine growing old with, which no longer ends at 40. It yeah. now goes into our 90s.
Yep. Yeah.
Totally. I just think the whole thing's crazy. Can I have some more wine?
Yes, I was going to say it's a wine break.
What
time.
A great oh ad God. Break.
Ad break.
Enjoy this message from our sponsors. That's something I've never said before. Okay, we're back. We refilled our wines.
Yay.
I have the smallest buzz. I didn't eat a lot today. Anyway.
That is a definite indication of not having eaten a lot, because it's like only glass two.
It's yeah. like the second glass. I mean, nobody cares what I had for lunch. I had a small Hale & Hearty, which is not enough food. Anyway, doesn't matter. Ready? Here's some production for you guys. We discussed this over the break. Okay, so we've been talking a lot about the young adult to-do list, which is something that is a blog. I pulled from a blog post that Darcy wrote on her website, askdrdarcy.com. But I just wanted to actually read the to-do list, because yeah. I think it's like for me, when I read this, I was just like, this sparked something in me that was like, oh my God, this is a very frustrating thing that I had never really identified as being so frustrating.
Dread.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Dread.
So I'm going to read it and then we can just kind of discuss it. We probably, you know, should have read this earlier, but if you want to produce podcast, you can go listen to Serial.
Mm-hmm.
So the young adult to-do list in this order is graduate high school, go to college, pick a lucrative, employable major, begin a serious heterosexual relationship, be offered a job before graduating or within a month or two of graduating, become self-reliant, read Stop Taking Money from Your Parents the moment you begin working, work your ass off at that job, also remain in that long-term heterosexual relationship, get promoted a lot, get engaged, get married, make babies. And that's what we're all expected to do.
Mm. So, like, going into the new year, what are, like, kind of from, like, so zoomed out, whichever one of those one of our listeners may be grappling with right now, what's, like, your kind of broader advice on how to just, like, think about this timeline? We all have a different version of it, but, I mean, that's the one that we've all been given. Like, what are some tangible steps you might offer in terms of how to how to reframe it, maybe.
I mean, I find first and foremost just naming it, putting language to this dynamic that we, that those of us who fall within a certain population, wind up consciously or unconsciously ascribing to and aiming to accomplish. I think that the language around it is really important, and just, you know, sitting with that for a hot minute, because it's really horrifying when you think that as an 18-year-old who's just left their home for the first time, in most cases, you're in college, you're living with a bunch of peers, you're expected to pick the career that is going to make you happy for the next, what is it, 70 years? I mean, it's just fucking crazy yeah. when you think about it. So, like, I think that, look, I'm all about action steps, and I'm all about dismantling old-fashioned perspectives, but I also think that there that we need to acknowledge that this insanity is imposed on us and that there's not been really language around it. Mm-hmm. We've not been having conversations about it, about this idea that even if you don't grow up with your parents as tiger parents, there is this expectation through society, through your peers, and you're all judging one another, whether you realize it or not, we're all judging one another by our age and by our accomplishments. So that first and foremost. But then if you want me to get into the spreadsheet, I'm happy to do that because I'm a Virgo. So I love to give action steps. You know, we're living much, much longer. We now know so much more about the human brain. We actually know, I'm going to dork out on you for a hot minute. We actually now know that the prefrontal cortex, which is the last part of the brain to develop, is not fully developed until we're about 32 or 33 years old. The prefrontal cortex is the part of our brain that allows us to anticipate the consequences of our actions, to plan, to organize, to really just see in the future, this ability to see in the future. So if that part of your brain is not established, you don't have the faculties, you don't have the tools or the ability to intelligently, I mean, that's part of why we recruit 19-year-olds for war. Because they're reckless. They can't, and they're going to run into danger. They think they're going to live forever. And it's part of the reason why when we're really young, our car insurance is so much higher. Mm. Because insurance companies know that we're reckless and we're more likely to take unnecessary risks because we can't anticipate the consequences of our actions. So to begin understanding that, again, I'm going to come out of this dorkiness in a minute, to begin understanding that we're ill-equipped. I mean, you're just turned 30. I mean, maybe your prefrontal cortex is already like fully formed, but I don't know.
No, I'm shaking my head.
Yeah. You know, and so like it would be okay for you to take a couple more years to fully determine what line of work you want to employ your MBA through.
Yeah.
And this sense of endless hope, which is amazing. I love that about young adults, that you guys have hope, and I want to nurture that and encourage that. But we exploit it in certain areas, and in other areas, we put a kibosh on it. We won't let you buy alcohol. We won't let you, you know, because at some level, society understands you really don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You really can't imagine what a certain amount of alcohol could potentially do to you. You know, I think that we have to begin understanding that we're not equipped as young adults to make the long-standing decisions that society has been imposing on us. Mm-hmm. We need a fucking movement, guys. Like, mm-hmm. I realize that I'm speaking in very macro terms, but I mean it. Like, this is not like a one podcast conversation. Mm-hmm. We need a whole paradigm shift in our society because we're setting young people up to fail. They're not equipped to handle the long-term consequences of the decisions that we're imposing on you. So I kind of think it's like a 1960s burn your bra. Like, you just have to say no. Just say no to the young adult to-do list because you can't possibly know that you're going to be okay with those decisions for the rest of your life. And in much the same way that the Tinder survey uncovered, the single not sorry survey uncovered that millennials are already beginning to think this way. They're already wanting more adventure. I don't know that we can necessarily extrapolate any causality through the correlation of the fact that the divorce rate does appear to be dipping and millennials are marrying later. Causation does not equal... correlation doesn't equal causation. Yeah. Two glasses of wine, folks. Clearly, I'm a cheap date. But it does appear, look, research has shown us forever that the longer you wait to get married, the more likely you are to stay married. The longer you wait to make lifelong decisions, the more likely you are to be able to live up to those decisions. And I just think that we have to all soften around one another and around ourselves. And you just have to breathe. I know it sounds insane. Like, I want to give you a tangible, do this, don't do that. Okay. Breathe. Don't ascribe to the young adult to-do list. Challenge it and call it out.
Totally. And like, I think
at Christmas.
Yeah. And I think also, and I'm calling myself out for this, I think it's so important to stop judging other people for making choices that don't fall in line with the young adult to-do list. Like, I think that I've lightly eye-rolled to myself before when people, I don't know, like, get engaged, like, to, I don't know. I have some feels about people getting married young, but when people are doing things in a way that I see as out of order, I have a light judgment for sure. But then I get so angry and annoyed when people put that on me. Because, mm-hmm. like, I do, you know, I've been with my boyfriend for 5 years. People ask me when I'm going to get married almost every day.
It's so annoying.
It's so annoying.
What but do also, you say?
I say never. Which is probably not the truth. It's like,
But that's such a great answer, by the way.
I say it and like defiantly. I'm like, never, you know?
No, I wish everyone could see your face when you did that.
No, honestly, I love it. No, we have to do a gif of this.
Never.
Never. Because it's like, you know, and I understand, especially with my family members who are from a different time and a different generation, and my family, I'm from a huge family, a lot of kids, everybody, like, it's, I have an amazing, very rich extended family. And I get that people try to understand family in that term and in those ways. And I do think that a lot of it is well-intentioned. But I also just think that's a lot of the way people try to understand you and your relationship.
Right. And so one of the things that I have encouraged people to do is try and get beneath. So when family members or extended family members or family friends gather for the holidays and they ask those well-meaning, dumb questions, try and remain present to the idea that what they are really doing is just they have an absence of they don't know how to connect to you. They don't know. It's the equivalent of asking a teenager how school. They don't really give a shit how school is. Yep. They just don't know what else to fucking ask you. And that's why they're asking that, you know, prepackaged question. What they really want to know is that you're happy. And if you can get past the poor delivery and the poor question and the poorly phrased question of, you know, so when are you going to get a job? Do you have something lined up? How about that internship? When are you going to get a boy? Are you dating someone exciting? Mm-hmm. When are you guys going to get married? Are you going to have kids? If you can get beneath that and remember the subtext is all about they care about you. They don't have better language. They just want to know that you're happy. Just speak about the things that make you happy, and they're going to be happy and quiet. Mm. But it's so hard because it's triggering.
Yeah.
You know, it's like so fucking annoying when they ask those questions, because it just underscores where everyone isn't in their life.
Yeah, it's a really quick way to make you feel very insecure. Even if I feel this way still, where like in general in life right now, like I feel pretty good. I'm like, I'm happy. I'm doing good. I'm, you know, like stuff's in a good place. And when someone's like, ask me anything specific about my career, and I usually take like 5 to 10 minutes to try to explain what I'm doing and what I'm trying to do. And then I feel so, so insecure. And that's, it is the most non-traditional aspect of my life. Is
your
what
career?
My career and what I do and how I make my money versus what I'm trying to still be when I grow up. Like,
oh,
it's
honey,
all.
We'll just talk and we'll work out an elevator pitch. That's all you need.
Oh my God, literally.
Yeah, you just need that one liner.
Totally. Now I just say I make videos. People, what do you do? I'm like, I make videos.
That's right.
So it covers it
also,
all.
Also, like, people of a certain age can't wrap their heads around what the hell you do.
Totally. And, you know, I don't want to. It's annoying to call yourself anything else. Like, I don't want to say, like, I'm a filmmaker. Like, I'm not. You know,
It's funny, though. I've had to, like, really work on, like, kind of our 30-second elevator pitch for interviews, not business school.
It's the hardest thing you're ever going to do as an entrepreneur is figure out your elevator pitch.
Yeah. But it's, like, we have done so much, Liza. I've just, like, learned that because you have to own it. And it's very interesting from the rest of my MBA class. They're like, that's really cool. I'm like, but we weren't, like, this money-making, crazy money-making startup, like, the way and I don't call us a startup, but we did start a company.
No,
like,
totally.
It's so
and it's
cool.
Like, I don't feel, like, when I think about it, I don't feel insecure. I feel really proud of everything I've done and what I'm doing, and the fact that like I have an art, I have an actual lucrative artistic career, which is like
an oxymoron.
And it's, you know, I'm a video editor, which is not the sexiest thing in the world, but I make like a great living doing something artistic. Like that's a big win to my 22-year-old self. But when I try to explain it to an adult, quote unquote. I'm like immediately in this place of being like, oh my God, I can't tell you in one sentence what I do.
I work in post-production.
Yeah, I do a lot of that. Right. You know, I tend to tell them what I'm currently working on, which I don't even know why. But sometimes, you know, if it's for a network or something like that, it gives me this feeling of legitimacy. Anyway, this doesn't even matter.
No, but it does matter. Totally matters because it speaks to the pressure that we have, that everyone has, and particularly young people, of needing to validate every aspect of every milestone on that young adult to-do list. And It sucks.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And I think that it's funny because when I was single, that was definitely the thing that I just didn't want anyone to ask about ever. And it's, you know, I think we all do tend to feel like we have that thing that we're like, just please don't fucking ask because I don't want to talk about it, whatever. But I think that the dating thing, especially, you know, we're coming off the holidays. Full disclosure, right now it's December 19th that we're recording. So when this is released, we'll be coming off the holidays, but we're all just anticipating them. But I think that coming off the holidays, like everyone's probably had a lot of difficult conversations, especially like a lot of our listeners who are like single out there fucking dating, like in the shit.
And even New Year's is just
hard. Oh my God,
yes.
That kiss, which I never contemplated. My poor single clients, I want to just like put them in a whole collective like hug. Like that kiss is something that is dreaded. It is universally dreaded, that midnight kiss. Who will I kiss?
Yeah, and even in my like half relationships and things over the years, like New Year's to Valentine's Day were always very empty times in my life. So like I almost this year I'm like I have a New Year's kiss and I don't want to do it.
Right?
Because I'm
I feel
solidarity.
That way, yes.
Because
those
feel holidays
that way about
are
Valentine's
just
Day.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, Steph, we are not celebrating that bullshit holiday because we have friends and clients who are shamed as a result of this holiday. And in solidarity, we are not celebrating it. We don't do it.
Yeah. No, I love that because I'm just like,
I'm like the relationship expert.
Nope. No,
literally won't do Valentine's
Day. Literally, fuck it. I won't go out on Valentine's Day. I'm like, I don't want to go out and spend a shitload of money on a prefix menu. I don't fucking want to eat.
It's going to suck anyway.
Yeah. They both, yeah, have dumb prefix or situations. And they, I just hate, because I just felt like that for so long. Just like, oh, I'm not enough because I don't have a relationship. Even if deep down I kind of was really happy, independent, and single, I just, because of society, felt like not enough. Now, in a relationship, I really like being in this relationship because of my partner. I hate that society makes us feel like that's better than. Like, we talk about this all the time in the podcast. Both are equally awesome and equally shitty. Like, at points, you know? Like, I just...
And relationships these holidays are so much... By the way, like, just to give you props, like, both of you, being in a relationship, hardest work of your life. I mean, nobody's mm-hmm. going to hold up a magnifying glass to your flaws more so than your partner.
Yeah.
And if you think the boys are bad, try dating a girl.
Yeah.
FYI.
Honestly, yeah. Just saying. Harder.
Imagine double yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Totally. Like, people who... do know how to also, like, talk about their feelings and can speak back to you and tell.
Oh, my God. Stephanie, I'm sure, practice. We come home and she wants to talk about her feelings. I'm like, oh, my God, man, we're so much easier. But
and a therapist, too. Like, two therapists together.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
I was just like, isn't there, but we're watching Blindspot. We're going to watch this show instead. Isn't that so much better than your feelings?
I mean... It's
just a lot, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think that, like, the, you know, the gleaming city on the hill, right, is, like, finding a partner, like, dating someone who's really self-aware and emotionally intelligent. But I do have times where I'm, like, and I'm the luckiest. My boyfriend is so, like, for a cis, straight dude, whatever, he is so... like, good at talking about his feelings. He taught me a lot about talking about my feelings.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll attest
well
to that.
Done,
it's like,
girlfriend.
It's great. And he's also a Gemini. There's a lot of feelings and a lot of, like, hey, no, I saw that face. Like, let's talk about it. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. I want to finish the movie. Like,
can we stop hitting pause? Like, literally, for the love of God.
Oh, my God.
It's an hour and a half movie. It shouldn't take 3 hours.
Literally.
Like, my life every night.
Yeah.
I feel like you have something similar each going on.
100%.
Fully. We were watching the Bruce Springsteen on Broadway thing a couple nights ago, and which is amazing. You guys should watch it. But I was crying a lot. Like, a lot. And he kept pausing and being like, are you okay? Do we need to talk about it? And I was like, let me have a goddamn experience. It's fine, you know? Like, but, you know, but it's true. It is. It's not. It's even when it's good, it's like you're.
It's constant
you're
work.
Building,
you have to nurture. You have to nurture yourself. You have to build yourself and you have to nurture the relationship and build the mm-hmm. relationship. And people think that they can expend all their energy at work on their careers, especially in, like, real hardcore locations like New York, LA, Chicago, or whatever, and they think that they can just expend all their juice at work and come home, and they're, regardless of their gender or their sexual orientation, they're going to come home to this person that has, like, a plethora of space in their cup of compassion for them, and we're all blown away when we each want the same thing from one another and nobody has anything left to give. Mm. We have to save something for the end of the day. We can't, I hate this term, but we can't blow our load at work. We just can't. Yeah. We have to reserve some for home. Your relationship, look, at the end of the day, in the final analysis, you're going to evaluate the quality of your life by how well you loved and how well you were loved by others. And that is all predicated on the amount that you invest in your relationships. And if you invested in your relationships just 10% of what most of us invest in our careers, can you imagine how, and if you expected it to be a little bit of work instead of, wait, no, this should be fun. This should be easy. This is my personal life. This is the place where I should be safe. you create the safety by having the hard conversations and coming through them on the other side. But we have to invest the energy in our personal relationships, all of them, so that at the end of our days, we're going to feel like it was a life worthy. We do it, you know, the New Year's, what I would love people to question on the New Year is, what do you want? How do you want your obituary to read? Mm-hmm. How do you want your life to be described? Ask yourself that at the end of the year. How well did you love your friends? Not just your intimate partner. How good were you and kind to you, to the people that support you at work? You know, how courteous are you to the people who society doesn't think matters? This is what character is. And this is really, you know, not to sound like some morally superior asshole, but this is really, in the final analysis, how we're going to evaluate life. Yeah. You know?
I had to write, this is morbid, this wasn't something in for acting class. I had to write, I maybe didn't have to, but it was an option for like some writing class or some sociology class. I don't remember. Write your own obituary, which sounds so morbid.
But it's amazing because it really sets forth your goals for life.
What's actually important to you? And also, yeah, to add to everything you just said, also like how you treated yourself too. I feel like so many of our listeners are so hard on themselves, or like waiting, or like so much ghosting, all of those things we don't have to get into, but it's like, I don't know. Now I'm being cheesy, but just entering the new year, just like being good to yourself too and nurturing your relationship with yourself, because I don't know. It's
the struggle's real.
Yeah.
The struggle is truly real. For sure. And like, we do need to be kind to ourselves and just understand it's not about how well I'm doing compared to you. It's how well I'm doing compared to how I did last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Myself. And how good I was to myself and those I love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not about how well you're doing compared to the young adult to-do list.
For sure.
Not to be so shoehorning the theme in. But
No.
Genuinely,
it's true.
I feel that way. Sometimes I take a step back and I'm like, fuck the to-do list. I'm happy and I'm proud of what I've accomplished.
And you should be,
by the way. So why am I thinking like, thank you? But I'm like, but then it's like, why do I think these negative thoughts? And it's because of that to-do list. And so for me, I'm like, can I just take a step back and gauge, like, am I happy? Do I feel good? Mm-hmm. And, like, lots of times the answer to that also is, like, no. You know, like, I'm stressed. I haven't done this, the thing that I want to do, or I want to change this or whatever. But, like, that's so illuminating to be, like, despite the to-do list, despite what everyone else is expecting of me, what do I want? Like, where are the areas I want to be better? Like, without all that fucking noise.
And then maybe... this is pretty annoying, but like any like...
I love annoying.
A little... well, just because in your relationship with Tinder, and we do have a lot of listeners who are actively dating, because kind of that's a lot of the premise. So anything like... not piece of advice that's too broad, but just anything maybe we didn't touch on when it comes specifically to dating apps that you feel like you'd like to share. Some wisdom, I guess.
Yeah. You know... dating can be an extension of your, it can be another extracurricular activity. It doesn't have to be goal-oriented. Mm-hmm. It can just be for fun, which is something that my generation didn't do. I mean, I didn't enjoy dating for 1 second. Mm. It was always with an end goal in sight. And when I look back on that, I'm like, wow, how unfortunate. I had so many, well, I didn't have that many years, but like, because I was married at 29. But there were so many great experiences that I didn't fully embrace because I was so focused on where this was leading. I think it's okay. And I want to encourage people. I think we learn about ourselves by meeting other people. Like, I've learned about myself tonight based on the questions that you asked me because I didn't anticipate them, because nothing here is produced, apparently. And so, which I appreciate, because it caused me to think in a different way. Every time we meet a new potential partner on a date, we're going to be challenged and stretched in a different direction. And okay, this is going to sound so ridiculous. That can kind of be your personal development. Mm-hmm. It really can. I mean, think about it. Meeting a new person once a week, twice a week, that, first of all, the I don't have to tell you. How much energy does that take?
I mean, quite a bit. Like, yeah, you have to like go into it with an attitude of like, I'll have fun and see and like stay as long as I want to. And yeah, because it's a lot, just especially organizing the dates. It seems easier in this day and age, but it's hard to get on them.
And the idea that regardless of how the date ends, it can be a win. I don't know why people don't see it the way I see it. But my clients look at me like I have two heads. I'm like, dude, if it doesn't work out, it's a wing girl. It's a wing guy. It's like, it's somebody to go out with. You know what
networking,
I mean?
Sometimes.
It's networking. Yes. It's like, always leave them happy and always be kind, you know, again.
Or is the like, thank you next thing of like, cool, I learned something from this date. I learned something I don't want. I learned something I don't like. I learned something about myself. I learned like. Yeah.
How did you handle that awkward or like really rude situation that he or she created?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which can be awful, but sometimes an
what a teachable
story.
Moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, first of all, teachable moment, more importantly. But then we have our listeners submit worst first dates. So worst case, you can send us a story, you know, like usually. And it's very rare that dates are so awful that, like, nothing good can come from that.
Totally. I think that they, and again, I sell hope. I get it. And I'm an eternal optimist, but I'm also not naive. And I do think that every single interaction can serve you. And it's not always just about serving you. Guys, we have to serve others, you know? And sometimes it's about, you know, giving the other person a good experience. Mm. But I do think that there's something very growth oriented about and just exciting about meeting new people and also exhausting about meeting new people. Let's be real. And that's where the growth comes in. So I think just viewing dating and apps as an extension of your life and just something that you do, like you go to the gym, you go on a date once a week, twice a month, something.
Yep. Yeah.
Get off the app and meet in person also, by the way. Yes. That's a thing.
That was my thing because probably because I had to keep delivering content for our listeners. But like, I was like, you can't go back and forth. And we get so many emails about that
where you do everything you needed to communicate, everything you had, you communicated through text and you get in person and there's nothing left if you ever get in person at all.
Yeah. Getting on the date, so important. I'm so glad you mentioned that because it validates what we always say.
Totally. It's so funny because my one of my best friends and cousin who was on the podcast a couple weeks ago now talking about one of her first dates kind of back after a thing. But I basically – and I feel like such an asshole because I'm just like, I'm selling you our program. Like literally I feel like a, you know, televangelist or something where I'm just like, hey, like you want this? Like get on board. But she's doing like a one date a week program and she's really forcing herself to like do it, like get out on the date. And she's just been on like three or something at this point. But she's already like, I see dating differently. And I do think it's like there's so much kind of like noise around dating that people get distracted from actually just doing it. And watching Kimmy go through this whole process and now watching the beginning for her and watching Kenny, like, I'm just
My brother took over. My little brother.
You have a Kenny and a Kenny?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't.
My parents didn't do it on purpose. He was named after my grandfather. Like, I was Kimberly on my own. I just like to give my parents credit. He's named after my grandfather who passed away after I was born. So then he was Kenneth. But then it was like, I ended up as Kimmy and he ended up as Kenny.
Well, it's like Kimberly and Kenneth don't sound that alike.
And then became. My parents aren't that cheesy. I mean, I just had like, you know, an 80s, 90s name. Oops. And then he just had my grandfather's name. But like, it's wild. Anyway. But he like finance bro, wonderful brother. And he would. But he was like, yeah, I'll do it. We'll switch up the normal. I'll start going on dates and like come on the podcast as I can. And for him even, it's been cool. But anyway, I digress fully. But yeah, I think that's our, let's end on that nice positive note.
Fuck yeah. It's like, get out there, do it, and fuck what people think of you. Is that our thesis?
Basically.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
So very important. Darcy, where can everyone find you, follow you, read from you, tell them everything?
So askdrdarcy.com. And I'm pretty sure my social media is Dr. Darcy It's at Dr. Dorsey, some variation of DR or DOCTOR on all the platforms.
And we'll link them all in the episode description. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here.
You guys are amazing. No, thank you. You're wonderful. Enjoyed this so much.
Thanks. Thank you too. I feel revved up to be better.
I'm like, yay!
2019.
Yes. Yeah. Delivered.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So yeah, we always sign off by telling our listeners to go on a date.
Go on a date.
Shout out to Anthony from 5ohm for making us sound really good in post. And you should check 5ohm out online at 5ohm.com.
And that's spelled F-I-V-E-O-H-M.
Ohm.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.